hold sway over the few surviving lords, mostly through his years of carefully handling Otterlin during the occupation. She gave him a glare sharp enough to slice skin. Adian lifted his hands.
Can you blame me for wanting to make sure this goes smoothly?
She shrugged, but didn't bite his head off.
Darrow was your uncle's lover,
he added, stretching his legs out before him.
For decades. He's never spoken once to me about your uncle, but they were very close, Aelin. Darrow didn't publicly mourn Orlan beyond what was required after the passing of a king. But he became a different man afterward. He's a hard bastard now, but still a fair one. Much of what he's done has been out of his unfading love for Orlan, and for Terrasen. His own maneuvering kept us from becoming completely starved and destitute. Remember that.
Indeed, Darrow had long straddled a line between serving the King of Otterlin and undermining him.
I know,
she said tightly. Pushing too far. That tone was likely her first and last warning that he was starting to piss her off. He'd spent many of the miles they'd traveled these past few days telling her about Wren, and Murtaugh, and Darrow. Adian knew she could likely now recite their landholdings, what crops and livestock and goods they yielded, their ancestors, dead, and surviving family members from this past decade. But pushing her about it one last time, making sure she knew? He couldn't shut the instincts down to ensure it all went well. Not when so much was at stake. From where he'd been perched on a high branch to monitor the forest, Rowan clicked his beak and flapped into the rain, sailing through his shield as if it parted for him. Adian eased to his feet, scanning the forest, listening. Only the trickle of rain on leaves filled his ears. Lysandra stretched, baring her long teeth as she did so, her needle-like claws slipping free and glinting in the firelight. Until Rowan gave the all-clear, until it was just those lords and no one else, the safety protocols they'd established would hold. Evangeline, as they had taught her, crept to the fire. The flames pulled apart like drawn curtains to allow her in Fleetfoot, sensing the child's fear and pressing close, passage to an inner ring that would not burn her, but would melt the bones of their enemies. Aelin merely glanced at Adian in silent order, and he stepped toward the western side of the fire, Lysandra taking up a spot at the southern point. Aelin took the northern but gazed west, toward where Rowan had flapped away. A dry, hot breeze flowed through their little bubble, and sparks danced like fireflies at Aelin's fingers, her hand hanging casually at her side. The other gripped Goldrin, the ruby in its hilt bright as an ember. Leaves rustled and branches snapped, and the sword of Orinth gleamed gold and red in the light of Aelin's flames as he drew it free. He angled the ancient dagger Rowan had gifted him in his other hand. Rowan had been teaching Adian, teaching all of them, really, about the old ways these weeks, about the long-forgotten traditions and codes of the Fae, mostly abandoned even in Maeve's court, but reborn here and enacted now, as they fell into the roles and duties that they had sorted out and decided for themselves. Rowan emerged from the rain in his Fae form, his silver hair plastered to his head, his tattoo stark on his tan face. No sign of the lords. But Rowan held his hunting knife against the bared throat of a young, slender-nosed man and escorted him toward the fire, the stranger's travel-stained, soaked clothes bearing Darrow's crest of a striking badger.
A messenger,
Rowan ground out. Aelin decided right then and there she didn't particularly enjoy surprises. The messenger's blue eyes were wide, but his rain-slick, freckled face was calm, steady. Even as he took in Lysandra, her fangs gilded with firelight, even as Rowan nudged him forward, that cruel knife still angled at his throat. Adian jerked his chin at Rowan.
He can't very well deliver the message with a blade at his windpipe. Rowan lowered his weapon, but the Fey Prince didn't sheath his knife, didn't move more than a foot from the man. Adian demanded, "Where are they?" The man bowed swiftly to her cousin.
"At a tavern, 4 miles from here, General."
The words died as Aelin at last stepped around the curve of the fire. She kept it burning high, kept Evangeline and Fleetfoot ensconced within. The messenger let out a small noise. He knew. With the way he kept glancing between her and Adian, seeing the same eyes, the same hair color. He knew. And as if the thought had hit him, the messenger bowed. Aelin watched the way the man lowered his eyes, watched the exposed back of his neck, his skin shining with rain. Her magic simmered in response. And that thing, that hideous power hanging between her breasts, seemed to open an ancient eye at all the commotion. The messenger stiffened, wide-eyed at Lysandra's silent approach, her whiskers twitching as she sniffed at his wet clothes. He was smart enough to remain still.
"Is the meeting canceled?"
Adian said tightly, scanning the woods again. The man winced.
"No, General, but they want you to come to the tavern where they're staying, because of the rain."
Adian rolled his eyes.
"Go tell Darrow to drag his carcass out here. Water won't kill him."
"It's not Lord Darrow," the man said quickly. "With all due respect, Lord Murtaugh's slowed down this summer. Lord Wren didn't want him out in the dark and rain."
The old man had ridden across the kingdoms like a demon from hell this spring, Aelin remembered. Perhaps it had taken its toll. Adian sighed.
"You know we'll need to scout the tavern first. The meeting will be later than they want."
"Of course, General. They'll expect that."
The messenger cringed as he at last spotted Evangeline and Fleetfoot within the flames' ring of safety. And despite the Fey Prince armed beside him, despite the ghost leopard with unsheathed claws sniffing at him, the sight of Aelin's fire made his face go deathly pale.
"But they are waiting, and Lord Darrow is impatient. Being outside Orinth's walls makes him anxious. Makes us all anxious, these days."
Aelin snorted softly. "Indeed." Chapter 3 Manon Blackbeak stood at attention, by one end of the long, dark bridge into Morath, and watched her grandmother's coven descend from the gray clouds. Even with the plumes and pillars of smoke from the countless forges, the High Witch of the Blackbeak Witch Clan's voluminous obsidian robes were unmistakable. No other dressed as the matron did. Her coven swept from the heavy cloud cover, keeping a respectful distance from the matron and the extra rider flanking her massive bull. Manon, her 13 in rank behind her, made no movement as the wyverns and their riders landed on the dark stones of the courtyard across the bridge. Far below, the rushing of a filthy ruined river roared, vying with the scrape of talons on stone and the rustle of settling wings. Her grandmother had come to Morath, or what was left of it, when one-third was nothing more than rubble. Asterin hissed in a breath, as Manon's grandmother dismounted in a smooth movement, scowling at the black fortress looming above Manon and her 13. Duke Parrington was already waiting in his council chamber, and Manon had no doubt his pet, Lord Vernon, would do his best to undermine and shake her at every turn. If Vernon were to make a move to be rid of Manon, it would be now, when her grandmother was seeing for herself what Manon had accomplished, and failed to do. Manon kept her back straight as her grandmother strode across the broad stone bridge
her steps drowned out by the rush of the river, the beat of distant wings, and those forges working day and night to equip their army. When she could see the white in her grandmother's eyes, Manon bowed. The creak of flying leathers told her the 13 had followed suit. When Manon lifted her head, her grandmother was before her. Death, cruel and cunning, waited in that gold-flecked onyx stare.
"Take me to the Duke,"
the matron said by way of greeting. Manon felt her 13 stiffen, not at the words, but at the High Witch's coven now following on her heels. Rare, so rare for them to track her, guard her. But this was a citadel of men and demons, and this would be an extended stay, if not permanent, judging by the fact that her grandmother had brought along the beautiful, dark-haired young witch currently warming her bed. The matron would be a fool not to take extra protection, even if the 13 had always been enough, should have been enough. It was an effort not to flick out her iron nails at the imagined threat. Manon bowed again and turned into the towering open doors to Morath. The 13 parted for Manon and the matron as they passed, then closed ranks like a lethal veil. No chances, not when the heir and the matron were concerned. Manon's steps were near silent as she led her grandmother through the dark halls, the 13 and the matron's coven trailing close. The servants, through either spying or some human instinct, were nowhere to be found. The matron spoke as they ascended the first of many spiral stairwells toward the Duke's new council chamber.
"Anything to report?"
"No, Grandmother." Manon avoided the urge to glance sidelong at the witch, at the silver-streaked dark hair, the pale features carved with ancient hate, the rusted teeth on permanent display. The face of the High Witch who had branded Manon second, who had cast Astarin's stillborn witchling into the fire, denying her the right to hold her once, who had then beaten and broken her second, thrown her into the snow to die, and lied to Manon about it for nearly a century. Manon wondered what thoughts now churned through Astarin's head as they walked, wondered what went through the heads of Sorrel and Vesta, who had found Astarin in the snow, then healed her, and never told Manon about it either. Her grandmother's creature. That's what Manon was. It had never seemed like a hateful thing.
"Did you discover who caused the explosion?"
The matron's robe swirled behind her as they entered the long, narrow hallway toward the Duke's council chamber.
"No, Grandmother."
Those gold-flecked black eyes snapped to her.
"How convenient, Wingleader, that you complain about the Duke's breeding experiments, only for the yellow legs to be incinerated days later."
"Good riddance," Manon almost said, despite the coven's lost in the blast. "Good rutting riddance that the breeding of those yellow legs Volg witchlings had stopped." But Manon felt, rather than saw or heard, her 13's attention fix on her grandmother's back. And perhaps something like fear went through Manon, at the matron's accusation, and the line her 13 were drawing, had drawn for some time now. Defiance. That's what it had been these past months. If the High Witch learned of it, she'd tie Manon to a post and whip her back until her skin was hanging in strips. She'd make the 13 watch, to prove their powerlessness to defend their heir, and then give them the same treatment, perhaps chucking salted water on them when she was done, then do it again, day after day. Manon said coolly, "I heard a rumor it was the Duke's pet, that human woman, but as she was incinerated in the blaze, no one can confirm. I didn't want to waste your time with gossip and theories."
"She was leashed to him."
"It would seem her shadow fire was not." Shadow fire. the mighty power that would have melted their enemies within heartbeats, when combined with the mirror-lined witch towers the three matrons had been building in the Farian Gap. But with Kaltain gone, so was the threat of pure annihilation. Even if the Duke would suffer no other master now that his king was dead, he'd rejected the Crown Prince's claim to the throne. Her grandmother said nothing as they continued onward. The other piece on the board, the sapphire-eyed prince who had once been enthralled to a Volg prince himself, now free, and allied with that golden-haired young queen. They reached the council room doors, and Manon wiped all thoughts from her head as the blank-faced guards opened the black rock for them. Manon's senses honed to a killing calm the moment she laid eyes on the ebony glass table and who stood at it. Vernon, tall, lanky, ever smirking, clad in terracing green, and a golden-haired man, his skin pale as ivory. No sign of the Duke. The stranger twisted toward them. Even her grandmother gave pause. Not at the man's beauty, not at the strength in his sculpted body or the fine black clothes he wore, but at those gold eyes, twin to Manon's. The eyes of the Volg kings. Manon assessed the exits, the windows, the weapons she would use when they fought their way out. Instinct had her stepping in front of her grandmother. Training had her palming two knives before the golden-eyed man could blink. But the man fixed those Volg eyes on her. He smiled.
"Wing leader."
He looked to her grandmother and inclined his head.
"Matron."
The voice was carnal and lovely and cruel. But the tone, the demand in it. Something in Vernon's smirk now seemed too strained, his tan skin too pale. "Who are you?" Manon said to the stranger, more in order than a question. The man jerked his chin toward the unclaimed seats at the table.
"You know perfectly well who I am, Manon Blackbeak."
"Parrington. In another body, somehow. Because that otherworldly foul thing she had sometimes glimpsed staring out through his eyes. Here it was, given flesh. The matron's tight face told her she'd already guessed.
"I grew tired of wearing that sagging meat," he said,
sliding with feline grace into the chair beside Vernon. A wave of long, powerful fingers.
"My enemies know who I am. My allies might as well, too."
Vernon bowed his head and murmured,
"My Lord Erewhon, if it would please you, allow me to fetch the matron refreshments. Her journey has been long."
Manon assessed the tall, reedy man. Two gifts he had offered them, respect to her grandmother, and the knowledge of the Duke's true name. Erewhon. She wondered what Ghislaine, on guard in the hall beyond, knew of him. The Volg King nodded his approval. The Lord of Peranth hustled to the small buffet table against the wall, grabbing a ewer as Manon and the matron slid into seats across from the Demon King. Respect. Something Vernon had not once offered without a mocking grin. But now... Perhaps now that the Lord of Peranth realized what manner of monster held his leash, he was desperate for allies. Knew, perhaps, that Manon might have indeed been part of that explosion. Manon accepted the carved horn cups of water Vernon set before them, but did not drink. Neither did her grandmother. Across the table, Erewhon smiled faintly. No darkness, no corruption leaked from him, as if he were powerful enough to keep it contained, unnoticed, save for those eyes. Her eyes. Behind them, the rest of the 13 and her grandmother's coven remained in the hall, only their seconds lingering in the room as the doors were sealed again, trapping them all with the Volg King.
"So,"
Erewhon said, looking them over in a way that had Manon clamping her lips to keep from baring her teeth.
"Are the forces at the Farian Gap prepared?"
Her grandmother yielded a short dip of her chin. "They move at sundown. They'll be in Rifthold 2 days after that." Manon didn't dare shift in her seat.
"You're sending the host to Rifthold?"
The Demon King flashed her a narrowed glance.
"I am sending you to Rifthold, to take back my city. When you have finished your task, the Farian Legion will be stationed there, under the command of Iskra Yellowlegs."
To Rifthold, to finally fight, to see what their wyverns could do in battle. "Do they suspect the attack?" A lifeless smile.
"Our forces will move too swiftly for word to reach them."
No doubt why this information had been contained until now. Manon tapped a foot on the slate floor, already itching to move, to command the others in preparations. "How many of the Morath Covens do I bring northward?"
"Iskra flies with the second half of our aerial legion. I would think that only a few covens from Morath would be necessary."
A challenge. And a test. Manon considered.
"I fly with my 13 and 2 escort covens."
No need for their enemies to get a good count on how many covens flew in the aerial legion. Or for the entirety to go when she'd bet good money that even the 13 would be enough to sack the capital. Erewhon just inclined his head in agreement. Her grandmother gave her a barely perceptible nod, as close to approval as she'd ever get. But Manon asked,
"What of the prince?"
"King. King Dorian." Her grandmother shot her a look, but the demon said,
"I want you to personally bring him to me, if he survives the attack."
And with the fiery queen now gone, Dorian Havilyard and his city were defenseless. It mattered little to her. It was war. Fight this war, and go home to the wastes at the end of it. Even if this man, this demon king, might very well renege on his word. She'd deal with that later. But first, open battle. She could already hear its wild song in her blood. The Demon King and her grandmother were speaking again, and Manon cleared away the melody of clashing shields and sparking swords long enough to process their words.
"Once the capital is secured, I want those boats on the Avery."
"The men of the Silver Lake have agreed."
Her grandmother studied the map weighted to the glass table by smooth stones. Manon followed the matron's stare to the Silver Lake, at the other end of the Avery, and to its city, nestled against the White Fangs. Aniel.
Parrington,
Erewhon, shrugged his broad shoulders. "Its lord has not yet declared allegiance to me, or the Boy King. I suspect when word reaches him of Rifthold's demise, we will find his messengers groveling on our doorstep."
A flicker of a smile.
"Their keep along the western falls of the lake still bears scars from the last time my armies marched. I have seen the countless monuments in Aniel to that war. Its lord will know how easily I can again turn his city into a charnel house."
Manon studied the map again, shutting out the questions.
Old.
The Volg King was so old as to make her feel young, to make her grandmother look like a child, too.
Fool.
Perhaps her grandmother had been a fool to sell them into an unwitting alliance with this creature. She made herself meet Erewhon's stare. With strongholds in Morath, Rifthold, and Anio, that only covers the southern half of Otterlin. What of north of the Farian Gap, or south of Otterlin?
Belhaven remains under my control. Its lords and merchants love their gold too much. Melisande.
The Demon King's golden eyes fixed on the western country across the mountains.
Ilway lies shattered beneath her, Fenharrow in barren shambles to the east. It remains in Melisande's best interest to continue allying her forces with my own, especially when Terrasen hasn't a copper to its name.
The king's stare roamed northward.
Aelin Galathinius will have reached her seat by now, and when Rifthold is gone, she will also find how very alone she is in the north. Brennan's heir has no allies on this continent. Not anymore.
But Manon noted the way the Demon King's eyes darted to Ilway, just for a flicker. She looked to her grandmother, silent, yet watching Manon with an expression that promised death if she pushed too far. But Manon said to Erewhon, "Your capital is the heart of your commerce. If I unleash my legion upon it, you will have few human allies."
"Last I looked, Manon Blackbeak, it was my legion."
Manon held Erewhon's burning gaze, even as it stripped her bare. "Turn Rifthold into a complete ruin," she said flatly, "and rulers like the Lord of Aniel or the Queen of Melisande or the Lords of Fenharrow might very well find it worth the risk to rally against you. If you wreck your own capital, why should they believe your claims of alliance? Send a decree ahead of us that the king, the queen, are enemies to the continent. Establish us as liberators of Rifthold, not conquerors. And you will have the other rulers thinking twice before allying with Terrasen. I will sack the city for you enough to display our might, but keep the Iron Teeth host from leaving it in rubble." Those gold eyes narrowed with consideration. She knew her grandmother was one more word away from gouging her nails down Manon's cheek, but she kept her shoulders back. She didn't care about the city, its people, but this war could indeed turn against them if the annihilation of Rifthold united their scattered enemies, and delay the Blackbeaks that much more from returning to the Wastes. Vernon's eyes flicked to meet hers. Fear and calculation. He murmured to Erewhon,
"The wing leader has a point, milord."
What did Vernon know that she didn't? But Erewhon angled his head, his golden hair sliding across his brow.
"That is why you are my wing leader, Manon Blackbeak, and why Iskra Yellowlegs did not win the position."
Disgust and pride warred in her, but she nodded.
"One more thing."
She remained still, waiting. The Demon King lounged in his seat.
"There is a glass wall in Rifthold. Impossible to miss."
She knew it. Had perched atop it.
"Damage the city enough to instill fear. Show our power. But that wall, bring it down."
She only said, "Why?" Those golden eyes simmered like hot coals.
"Because destroying a symbol can break the spirits of men as much as bloodshed."
That glass wall, Aelin Galathinius's power, and mercy. Manon held that gaze long enough to nod. The king jerked his chin toward the shut doors in silent dismissal. Manon was out of the room before he'd turned back to Vernon. It did not occur to her until she was long gone,
that she should have remained to protect the matron. The 13 did not speak until they had landed at their personal armory in the army camp below, had not even risked it while saddling their wyverns in the new Aerie. Sweeping through the smoke and gloom that always wreathed Morath, the two escort covens Manon had selected, both Blackbeaks, steered for their own armories. Good. Now standing in the mud of the valley floor outside the cobbled-together labyrinth of forges and tents, Manon said to her assembled 13, "We fly in 30 minutes." Behind them, blacksmiths and handlers were already rushing to haul armor onto the chained-down wyverns. If they were smart, or fast, they wouldn't wind up between those jaws. Already Asterin's sky-blue mare was sizing up the man closest to her. Manon was half-tempted to see if she'd take a bite out of him, but she said to her coven, "If we are lucky, we will arrive before Iskra and set the tone for how the sacking unfolds. If we are not, we seek out Iskra and her coven upon arriving and staunch the slaughter. Leave the prince to me." She didn't dare look at Asterin as she said it. "I have no doubt the Yellowlegs will try to claim his head. Stop any one of them who dares take it. And perhaps put an end to Iskra as well. Accidents happen all the time in battle." The 13 bowed their heads in acquiescence. Manon jerked her head over a shoulder to the armory under the shoddy canvas tents. "Full armor." She gave them a slashing grin. "We don't want to make our grand appearance looking anything but our best." 12 matching grins met hers, and they peeled away, heading toward the tables and dummies where their armor had been carefully and meticulously built these past months. Only Asterin remained at her side, as Manon grabbed Ghislaine by an arm when the curly-haired sentinel strode past. She murmured over the clank of forges and roar of wyverns, "Tell us what you know of Erewhon." Ghislaine opened her mouth, dark skin wan, and Manon snapped, "Concisely." Ghislaine swallowed hard, nodding as the rest of the 13 readied beyond them. The warrior scholar whispered so only Manon and Asterin could hear. "He was one of the 3 Volg kings who invaded this world at the dawn of time. The other 2 were either killed or sent back to their dark world. He was stranded here with a small army. He fled to this continent after Maeve and Brannan squashed his forces, and spent 1,000 years rebuilding his numbers in secret, deep beyond the White Fangs. When he was ready, when he noticed that King Brannan's flame was dimming, Erewhon launched his attack to claim this continent. Legend has it that he was defeated by Brannan's own daughter and her human mate." Asterin snorted. "It would seem that legend is wrong." Manon released Ghislaine's arm. "Get ready. Tell the others when you can." Ghislaine bowed her head and stalked into the arsenal. Manon ignored Asterin's narrow stare. Now was not the time for this conversation. She found the mute blacksmith by his usual forge, sweat streaming down his soot-stained brow. But his eyes were solid, calm, as he pulled back the canvas tarp on his work table to reveal her armor. Polished. Ready. The suit of dark metal had been fashioned like intricate wyvern scales. Manon ran a finger along the overlapping plates and lifted a gauntlet, perfectly formed to her own hand. "It's beautiful." Horrible, yet beautiful. She wondered what he made of the fact that he'd forged this armor for her to wear while ending the lives of his countrymen. His ruddy face revealed nothing. She stripped off her red cloak and began donning the armor bit by bit. It slid over her like a second skin, flexible and pliant where she needed it to be, unyielding where her life depended on it. When she was done, the blacksmith looked her over and nodded, then reached below his table to place another object on its surface. for a heartbeat, Manon only stared at the crowned helmet. It had been forged of the same dark metal, the nose and brow guards fashioned so that most of her face would be in shadow, save for her mouth and her iron teeth. The six lances of the crown jutted upward like small swords. A conqueror's helm. A demon's helm. Manon felt the eyes of her 13, now armed, upon her, as she tucked her braid into the neck of her armor and lifted the helmet over her head. It fitted easily, its interior cool against her hot skin. Even with the shadows that hid most of her face, she could see the blacksmith with perfect clarity as his chin dipped in approval. She had no idea why she bothered, but Manon found herself saying, "Thank you." Another shallow nod was his only reply, before she swept from his table. Soldiers cowered from her storming path as she signaled to the 13 and mounted Abraxos, her wyvern preening in his new armor. She didn't look back at Morath as they took to the gray skies. Chapter 4 Adian and Rowan did not let Darrow's messenger go ahead to warn the lords of their arrival. If this was some maneuver to get them on uneven footing, despite all that Murtaugh and Wren had done for them this spring, then they'd gain the advantage whatever way they could. Aelin supposed that she should have taken the stormy weather as an omen, or perhaps Murtaugh's age provided a convenient excuse for Darrow to test her. She leashed her temper at the thought. The tavern was erected at a crossroads just inside the tangle of Oakwald. With the rain and night settling in, it was packed, and they had to pay double to stable their horses. Aelin was fairly certain that one word from her, one flicker of that telltale fire, would have cleared out not only the stables, but also the tavern itself. Lysandra had padded off half a mile away, and when they arrived, she slunk from the bushes and nodded her fuzzy, drenched head at Aelin. All clear. Inside the inn, there were no rooms to be found for rent, and the taproom itself was crammed full of travelers, hunters, and whoever else was escaping the downpour. Some even sat against the walls, and Aelin supposed that it was how she and her friends might very well spend their evening once this meeting concluded. A few heads twisted their way as they entered, but dripping hoods and cloaks concealed their faces and weapons, and those heads quickly returned to their drinks or cards or drunken songs. Lysandra had finally shifted back into her human form, and true to her oath months ago, her once full breasts were now smaller. Despite what awaited them in the private dining room at the back of the inn, Aelin caught the shapeshifter's eye and smirked. "Better?" she murmured over Evangeline's head, as Darrow's messenger, Adian at his side, strolled through the crowd. Lysandra's grin was half feral. "Oh, you have no idea." Behind them, Aelin could have sworn Rowan chuckled. The messenger and Adian turned down a hallway, the dim candlelight flickering amongst the raindrops still sliding off the round, scarred shield strapped across her cousin's back. The Wolf of the North, who, even though he had won battles with his fey speed and strength, had earned the respect and loyalty of his legion as a man, as a human. Aelin, still in her fey form, wondered if she should have shifted herself. Wren Alsbrook waited in there. Wren. Another childhood friend, whom she had almost killed, tried to kill this past winter, and who had no idea who she really was, who had stayed at her apartment without realizing it belonged to his lost queen. And Murtaugh. She had vague memories of the man, mostly involving him sitting at her uncle's table, slipping her extra blackberry tarts. Any good that remained, any shred of safety, it was thanks to Adian, the dents and scratches marring his metal shield utter proof of it, and to the three men who awaited her.
Aelin's shoulders began to curve inward, but Adian and the messenger paused before a wooden door, knocking once. Fleetfoot brushed against her calf, tail wagging, and Aelin smiled down at the hound, who shook herself again, flinging droplets of water. Lysandra snorted, bringing a wet dog into a covert meeting, very queenly. But Aelin had promised herself, months and months ago, that she would not pretend to be anything but what she was. She had crawled through darkness and blood and despair. She had survived. And even if Lord Darrow could offer men and funding for a war, she had both too. More would be better, but she was not empty-handed. She had done that for herself. For them all. Aelin squared her shoulders as Adian stepped into the room, already speaking to those inside.
"Just like you bastards to make us trudge through the rain because you don't want to get wet. Wren, looking put out as usual. Murtaugh, always a pleasure. Darrow, your hair looks as bad as mine."
Someone said from within, in a dry, cold voice,
"Given the secrecy with which you arranged this meeting, one would think you were sneaking through your own kingdom, Adian."
Aelin reached the ajar door, debating whether it was worth it to open the conversation by telling the fools inside to keep their voices down, but they were. With her fey ears, she picked up more sounds than the average human. She stepped ahead of Lysandra and Evangeline, letting them enter behind her, as she paused in the doorway to survey the private dining room. One window, cracked to soothe the stifling heat of the inn. A large rectangular table before a roaring hearth, littered with empty plates, crumbs, and worn serving platters. Two old men sat at it, one with the messenger whispering something in his ear too softly for her fey hearing, before he bowed to all of them and saw himself out. Both old men straightened as they looked past where Adian stood before the table, to her. But Aelin focused upon the dark-haired young man by the hearth, an arm braced against the mantel, his scarred tan face slack. She remembered those twin swords at his back, those dark, burning eyes. Her mouth had gone slightly dry by the time she tugged back her hood. Wren Alsbrook started. But the old men had risen to their feet. She knew one of them. Aelin didn't know how she hadn't recognized Murtaugh that night she'd gone to the warehouse to end so many of them, especially when he'd been the one who halted her slaughtering. The other old man, though, while wrinkled, his face was strong, hard, without amusement or joy or warmth. A man used to getting his way, to being obeyed without question. His body was thin and wiry, but his spine was still straight. Not a warrior of the sword, but of the mind. Her great-uncle Orlan had been both, and kind. She'd never heard a stern or raging word from Orlan. This man, though. Aelin held Darrow's gray-eyed gaze, predator recognizing predator. "Lord Darrow," she said, inclining her head. She couldn't help the crooked grin. "You look toasty." Darrow's plain face remained unmoved, unimpressed. "Well, then." Aelin watched Darrow, waiting, refusing to break his stare until he bowed. A dip of his head was all he offered. "A bit lower," she purred. Adian's gaze snapped to her, full of warning. Darrow did no such thing. It was Murtaugh who bowed deeply at the waist and said,
"Majesty, we apologize for sending the messenger to fetch you, but my grandson worries after my health."
An attempt at a smile,
to my chagrin.
Wren ignored his grandfather and pushed off the mantle,
his boot steps the only sound as he rounded the table.
You knew,
he breathed to Adian. Lysandra, wisely, shut the door, and bid Evangeline and Fleetfoot to stand by the window, to watch for any peering eyes. Adian gave Wren a little smile.
Surprise.
Before the young lord could retort, Rowan stepped to Aelin's side and pulled back his hood. The men stiffened as the Fey warrior was revealed in his undimmed glory, glazed violence already in his eyes, already focused on Lord Darrow.
Now that is a sight I have not seen for an age,
Darrow murmured. Murtaugh mastered his shock, and perhaps a bit of fear, enough to extend a hand toward the empty chairs across from them.
Please sit. Apologies for the mess. We hadn't realized the messenger might retrieve you so swiftly.
Aelin made no move to sit. Neither did her companions. Murtaugh added,
We can order fresh food if you wish. You must be famished.
Wren shot his grandfather an incredulous look that told her everything she needed to know about the rebel's opinion of her. Lord Darrow was watching her, again, assessing. Humility. Gratitude. She should try. She could try, damn it. Darrow had sacrificed for her kingdom. He had men and money to offer in the upcoming battle with Erewhon. She had called this meeting. She had asked these lords to meet them. Who cared if it was in another location? They were all here. It was enough. Aelin forced herself to walk to the table, to claim the chair across from Darrow and Murtaugh. Wren remained standing, monitoring her with dark fire in his eyes. She said quietly to Wren,
Thank you for helping Captain Westfall this spring.
A muscle flickered in Wren's jaw, but he said,
How does he fare? Adian mentioned his injuries in his letter.
Last I heard, he was on his way to the healers in Antica, to the Torre Chesme.
Good.
Lord Darrow said,
Would you care to enlighten me on how you know each other, or shall I be required to guess?
Aelin began counting to 10 at the tone, but it was Adian who said as he claimed a seat,
Careful, Darrow.
Darrow interlaced his gnarled but manicured fingers and set them on the table.
Or what? Shall you burn me to ash, princess? Melt my bones?
Lysandra slipped into a chair beside Adian and asked with the sweet, unthreatening politeness that had been trained into her,
Is there any water left in that pitcher? Traveling through the storm was rather taxing.
Aelin could have kissed her friend for the attempt at dulling the razor-sharp tension.
Who, pray tell, are you?
Darrow frowned at the exquisite beauty, the uptilted eyes that did not shy from his, despite her gentle words.
Right.
He had not known who traveled with her in Adian, or what gifts they bore.
Lysandra,
Adian answered, unbuckling his shield and setting it on the floor behind them with a heavy thunk.
Lady of Caravere.
There is no Caravere,
Darrow said. Aelin shrugged.
There is now.
Lysandra had settled on the name a week ago, whatever it meant, bolting upright in the middle of the night and practically shouting it at Aelin, once she'd mastered herself long enough to shift back into her human form. Aelin doubted she'd soon forget the image of a wide-eyed ghost leopard trying to speak. She smiled a bit at Wren, still watching her like a hawk. I took the liberty of buying the land your family yielded. Looks like you'll be neighbors.
And what bloodline?
Darrow asked, his mouth tightening at the brand across Lysandra's tattoo, the mark visible no matter what form she took.
Does Lady Lysandra hail from?
We didn't arrange this meeting to discuss bloodlines and heritage, Aelin countered evenly. She looked to Rowan, who gave a confirming nod that the instaff was far from the room
and no one was within hearing range. Her fey prince stalked to the serving table against the wall to fetch the water Lysandra had asked for. He sniffed it, and she knew his magic swept through it, probing the water for any poison or drug, while he floated 4 glasses over to them on a phantom wind. The 3 lords watched in wide-eyed silence. Rowan sat and casually poured the water, then summoned a 5th cup, filled it, and floated it to Evangeline. The girl beamed at the magic and went back to staring out the rain-splattered window, listening while pretending to be pretty, to be useless and small, as Lysandra had taught her. Lord Darrow said, "At least your fey warrior is good for something other than brute violence." "If this meeting is interrupted by unfriendly forces," Aelin said smoothly, "you'll be glad for that brute violence, Lord Darrow."
"And what of your particular skill set? Should I be glad of that, too?"
She didn't care how he'd learned. Aelin cocked her head, choosing each word, forcing herself to think it through for once. "Is there a skill set that you would prefer I possess?"
Darrow smiled. It didn't reach his eyes. "Some control would do your highness well."
On either side of her, Rowan and Adian were taut as bowstrings. But if she could keep her temper leashed, then they could. "Your highness, not majesty." "I'll take that into consideration," she said with a little smile of her own. "As for why my court and I wished to meet with you today."
"Court?"
Lord Darrow raised his silver brows. Then he slowly raked his stare over Lysandra, then Adian, and finally Rowan. Wren was gaping at them all, something like longing and dismay on his face.
"This is what you consider a court?"
"Obviously the court will be expanded once we're in Orinth."
"And for that matter, I do not see how there can ever be a court, as you are not yet queen."
She kept her chin high. "I'm not sure I catch your meaning." Darrow sipped from his tankard of ale. The plunk, as he set it down, echoed through the room. Beside him, Murtaugh had gone still as death.
"Any ruler of Terrasen must be approved by the ruling families of each territory."
Ice, cold and ancient, cracked through her veins. Aelin wished she could blame it on the thing hanging from her neck. "Are you telling me?" she said too quietly, fire flickering in her gut, dancing along her tongue. "That even though I am the last living Galathinius, my throne does not yet belong to me?" She felt Rowan's attention fix upon her face, but she didn't look away from Lord Darrow.
"I am telling you, princess, that while you might be the last living direct descendant of Brannan, there are other possibilities, other directions to go in, should you be deemed unfit."
"Waylon, please," Murtaugh cut in. "We did not accept the offer to meet for this. It was to discuss rebuilding, to help her and work with her."
They all ignored him. "Other possibilities such as yourself?" Aelin asked Darrow. Smoke curled in her mouth. She swallowed it down, nearly choking on it. Darrow didn't so much as flinch.
"You can hardly expect us to allow a 19-year-old assassin to parade into our kingdom and start yapping orders regardless of her bloodline."
"Think it through. Take a deep breath. Men, money, support from your already broken people. That's what Darrow offers. What you can stand to gain if you just control your rutting temper." She stifled the fire in her veins into murmuring embers. "I understand that my personal history might be considered problematic."
"I find everything about you, princess, to be problematic, the least of which is your choice in friends and court members. Can you explain to me why a common whore is in your company and being passed as a lady? Or why one of Maeve's minions is now sitting at your side?
He tossed a sneer in Rowan's direction.
Prince Rowan, is it?
He must have pieced it together from what the messenger had whispered in his ear upon arriving.
Oh, yes. We've heard of you. What an interesting turn of events, that when our kingdom is weakest and its heir is so young, one of Maeve's most trusted warriors manages to gain a foothold, after so many years of gazing at our kingdom with such longing. Or perhaps the better question is, why serve at Maeve's feet when you could rule beside Princess Aelin?
It took considerable effort to keep her fingers from curling into fists. Prince Rowan is my Caranam. He is above any doubt.
Caranam, a long-forgotten term. What other things did Maeve teach you in Dorinel this spring?
She bit back her retort, as Rowan's hand grazed hers beneath the table. His face bored, uninterested, the calm of a feral, frozen storm.
Permission to speak, Majesty?
She had a feeling Rowan would very, very much enjoy the task of shredding Darrow into little pieces. She also had the feeling that she'd very, very much enjoy joining him. Aelin gave a slight nod, at a loss for words herself, as she struggled to keep her flames at bay. Honestly, she felt slightly bad for Darrow, as the Fey Prince gave him a look laced with 300 years of cold violence.
Are you accusing me of taking the blood oath to my queen with dishonor?
Nothing human, nothing merciful in those words. To his credit, Darrow didn't shrink. Rather, he raised his brows at Adian, then turned and shook his head at Aelin.
You gave away the sacred oath to this male?
Ren gaped a bit as he surveyed Adian, that scar stark against his tan skin. She had not been there to protect him from it, or to protect Ren's sisters when their magic academy became a slaughterhouse during Otterlin's invasion. Adian caught Ren's surprise and subtly shook his head as if to say, "I'll explain later." But Rowan leaned back in his chair with a faint smile. And it was a horrifying, terrible thing.
I have known many princesses with kingdoms to inherit, Lord Darrow, and I can tell you that absolutely none of them were ever stupid enough to allow a male to manipulate them that way, least of all my queen. But if I were going to scheme my way onto a throne, I'd pick a far more peaceful and prosperous kingdom.
He shrugged.
But I do not think my brother and sister in this room would allow me to live for very long, if they suspected I meant their queen ill, or their kingdom.
Adian gave a grim nod, but beside him, Lysandra straightened. Not in anger or surprise, but pride. It broke Aelin's heart as much as it lightened it. Aelin smiled slowly at Darrow, flames banking. How long did it take you to come up with a list of every possible thing to insult me with and accuse me of during this meeting? Darrow ignored her and jerked his chin at Adian.
You're rather quiet tonight. I don't think you particularly want to hear my thoughts right now, Darrow,
Adian replied.
Your blood oath is stolen by a foreign prince. Your queen is an assassin who appoints common whores to serve her, and yet you have nothing to say.
Adian's chair groaned, and Aelin dared a look, to find him gripping the sides of it so hard his knuckles were white. Lysandra, though stiff-backed, did not give Darrow the pleasure of blushing with shame. And she was done. Sparks danced at her fingertips beneath the table. But Darrow went on before Aelin could speak or incinerate the room.
Perhaps, Adian, if you hope to still gain an official position in Terrasen, You could see if your kin in Wendlin have reconsidered the betrothal proposition of so many years ago. See if they'll recognize you as family. What a difference